but like about just like we've been at war since I was nine. No, eight. I'm born 92.
I was seven.
That means we've been at war for like 20 years, and yeah. I've lived the majority of my life not at war, not in war, but like in a country that's at war.
Not feeling like it though. Not feeling.
But we're still at war with two countries.
Yeah.
And like, yeah. And I lived through two economic downturns. Mm-hmm. I want my coins. Not as the greatest mm-hmm. generation, but mm-hmm. as the slight, a pretty good generation. Mm-hmm. I want my coins. If we bounce back from this, I want my coins.
Hey, but the fact that you want those coins is that millennial snowflake coming through, right?
No.
You want to feel special?
I don't want to feel special.
You want a medal for living through horrific shit?
Let's talk about this 80s generation that had nothing but good times and fucking cheap houses and like going to Harvard for like $8,000 a year and like everything was fine. No, that's the bullshit generation.
You guys are the softest motherfuckers out there. I'll say it. My parents.
Right? Let's just. Oh, you want to be a comedian? Hey, just go down to the comedy club, and then there's a circuit for you,
and
you
just start yelling. Yes, and you can climb through it, all of it, and it's not oversaturated or anything.
You
can
do just bits about socks, and people appreciate you.
Back when sock bits could fly.
Sock bits. Mm-hmm. Nobody gets a goddamn sock bit. There's been two fucking recessions in my lifetime. You know what? Let's start the show. What are we doing today?
We're looking at the life and times of Geronimo, a Chiricahua Apache warrior. Robert Utley, who wrote the book in 2012 that I'm basing most of this on, I also read Geronimo's autobiography, but Robert Utley says that this is the like most famous indigenous warrior. I think Sitting Bull is, but I also don't know everything that Robert Utley does. So,
yeah.
Take it or leave it, you know? Right. Geronimo, born 1823. He is born as Goyacuja, which means the one who yawns, but he eventually adopts the name Geronimo. Yeah. Born along the Gila River in New Mexico. And like I said, he's a Chiricahua Apache. The specific band is Bedonkohe. They're kind of in the Mogollon mountain range or like Dragoon Mountains in like southwestern New Mexico. And his father is this guy named Tali Shim.
Give these people New Mexico. Why do we want New Mexico? We didn't even populate it after.
We kind of just said we don't really want this. We're kind of good.
All New Mexico, the only thing I know about New Mexico now is just like white women who like wear turquoise.
And too many scarves.
Scarves and like a poncho.
People to direct you to the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum. Best thing, although I will say, New Mexico. Most of what I know about New Mexico is informed by Vince Gilligan and Breaking Bad. And based off of that, I'm going to say not a place I really ever want to go.
No, but that's just the heartland, baby. That's a lot of meth around. A
lot of meth.
Everywhere from the Rockies to about Philly. Because in Philly, it turns into heroin.
You get the shift. That's the real American divide is uppers Kentucky, or downers.
It turns into heroin, and then like it just becomes like, oh, you was a football player, and then you got injured, then you got overprescribed OxyContin, and now you out here. It's a fiend.
Wow. And they synthesize the morphine or whatever opioids you have from probably poppies grown in Afghanistan.
Let's not talk about that. All right, I don't want to do that show.
Don't want to open that box back up. You know
that show is going to involve a lot of sweating and cursing out and call for an overthrow of the government, which I can't do on this podcast.
Can't do illegal. Quite yet. That's we're not illegal. There yet. We'll get there. In his autobiography, Geronimo says that as far as his childhood, he said, I was warmed by the sun, rocked by the wind, and sheltered by the trees as other Indian babes, which I thought was just nice. The Chiricahua diet, they grow corn, beans, melons, and pumpkins as well, in addition to like supplementing their food stores by like raiding. And there's a distinguish between like raiding and warring and, you know, raiding, you try to inflict as little casualties as possible, whereas war, it's all out, you know, it's fucking war. Yeah. And then they drank this beverage called Tiswin, which is like fermented from corn, and it's an alcoholic beverage that was used for like ceremonial purposes and whatnot.
No, I've had corn liquor before. Come on. I went to University of Missouri. Come on, MIZZOU. Yeah, I can't feel my left toe anymore, so that's fine.
Mm. My buddy used to grow or like ferment mead. No,
because I really felt like meth. I feel like that's what you're going for. Nobody, like stop growing 17th century beverages. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Hey, bro, we were 17. We didn't know which gas stations we're gonna call. We're like 17 or 16.
You're sociopaths.
growing.
You're sociopaths.
It was cool because like we couldn't buy any alcohol, and so he just like grew it. But then also, like, you never knew how much you should drink because we didn't know how alcoholic it was. I guess it was like a round wine, but you would drink like one glass of it and be like, all right, I feel kind of fucky, but I don't know if I want to feel more fucky. Or, and then you drink the second glass and then you throw up everywhere because you're drinking mead that was made inside of your friend's closet. So,
yeah. So, what did you say? Fuck, you say fucky?
Yeah, you're feeling fucky.
Yeah, I don't know what that, did you guys fuck each other?
No, you're feeling like, a little drunk.
What? You know, I've never heard this. You're feeling this saying.
You're feeling a little silly.
No, that's not a saying. That's not a saying. I think
that's a saying.
Okay, all right. I'm just saying you should have just got alcohol like everybody else did, like everybody I know did.
Yeah. Hey man, we're on a budget and underage. Okay?
No, you develop a questionable friendship with an older woman of 20, 24, 25 who maybe a little bit down on her luck and maybe wants to feel her youth again. And that's, and you develop that questionable friendship. That's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Yeah, not a good question.
I mean, different strokes for different folks, whatever gets you there.
Questionable friendships. Wow.
Okay. That's what it's all about. 1831. There are these feeding stations in Chihuahua, which is a state in Mexico, kind of like south of Texas and south of New Mexico, specifically in the cities of Janos, Corralitos, and Galeana. They give out supplies to the Chiricahuas, but in the year 1831, the feeding stations are terminated because Mexico can no longer afford to keep doling out rations. And so the Apaches, they split into, like, you got your war factions and then your peace factions. And this guy, Mangas Coloradas, who is a very notable Apache leader or Chiricahua Apache leader, he heads the war faction, and Geronimo starts to fall under his orbit.
I don't know why, but Mangos Coloradas in my mind said in like a Mexican kind of accent does sound like somebody talking about boobs.
Mangos Coloradas?
No, Mangos Coloradas. Like he said, he just holds, like, just does like the motion of like boobs.
Colorful.
I don't know what they mean. No. I don't know what they mean, but like, I don't know if the Mangos Coloradas sounds like psychedelic. Yeah, I don't want to do the accent because then people are gonna be like, "Oh, you racist," and I don't want to be racist.
I don't think anybody will mind. Mangas Coloradas. No, he was cool. And one of the things that he did as far as like his warrior training was concerned, Geronimo, he would like go on runs with a stone in his mouth, and he would have to take the stone out of his mouth and give it to his mentor to prove that through or for the entire run, he had been breathing only through his nose, which I thought was pretty crazy. Like, that's hella stamina, you know?
That's also how I learned to swim. So
really?
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, did it work?
No.
Okay. Well,
I learned how to swim differently, but yeah, that's how. Yeah.
You're not Geronimo, man.
I'm not Geronimo. I'm not a 19th century Native American or indigenous person from New Mexico. I'm Josh.
You're Josh. That's
what's the let, which is the letdown.
I'm disappointed. I mean, can I re-roll these dice?
I would love to re-roll these dice and become somebody else. Oh my god.
Random
please.
Re-roll on the Sims button, just like
For sure. Anything would be an upgrade.
1834 to 1845, the Mexicans are basically waging a war of extermination against the holdout or the Apaches, the Chiricahuas, who favor war. And there's kind of these hybrid columns under some U.S. traders. So there was like a U.S. presence. It's not like official. It's just private citizens who trade with the indigenous and then also trade with Mexico. And then it's like, hey, you want to kill the Apaches? And Americans are like, sure, give me some men and I'll do it, man. I'm about it, you know?
Because that's how you climb the ladder. You're like, yo, you guys are going to war? I'm on your side. But after I'm on your side, I want that top. I want that, like, that little valley.
I want a land grant. I want a big-ass land grant.
Yeah, this is...
I want, yeah.
it works out for some people, white people, but it never works out for others. It's black people. It's,
yeah. Oh, we're going to get to that. Oh, hell yeah. So the stations are reopened for peaceful Apaches, I think in 1841 or 1842. Meanwhile, Mangas Coloradas is holding out. And this is the period wherein Geronimo enters his manhood. Mm-hmm. And he marries his first wife is somebody known as the Fair Alope or the Fair Alope. I think Alope. And he has three children with her. 1846, you have the outbreak of the Mexican-American War. And so there's increased U.S. presence in both New Mexico and Arizona. And then from 46 to 1851, you've got a burgeoning intertribal Apache movement. Mangas Coloradas is like the primary leader. There's also this guy, Cochise, who is a Choconen chief. And Choconen, it's another band of Chiricahua. He's also Mangas Coloradas, his son-in-law. And then there's this other chief of the Chihene tribe, Cuchillo Negro, who actually initially gives the call to build this confederation. And these Chiricahua, this intertribal band, they're like raiding in Mexico and New Mexico. And so they've got enemies on all sides. Like the Mexicans are trying to get them to stop and Mexicans are defending themselves. And same thing with the whites. And so it's kind of, your allies are looking slim, you know?
Wait, so in the middle of 1846, like 1846 to 1851, they're waging this war, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this like Apache movement. Yeah. Within the middle of the Mexican-American War.
Yes.
That's a lot.
What a
that's
shit show.
There's right? a shit show. I mean, look, that's a like, shit show. Crazy, that's a shit man. Show.
Yeah.
That's like that's a lot. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Because they're crossing both borders. Attacking, like, mm-hmm. I imagine like somebody's a Mexican, like he's like a colonel, be like, all right, I'm done. Just fought the Americans. We're retreating. They did a lot in the Mexican-American War.
Yeah.
And then fucking they get attacked by Apache. Like, God damn.
Apache outlaws. And he's like, gee, just pops up. Can you imagine like being an Apache caught in the crosshairs of the war of like, wait, so explain this to me. I'm an Apache, right? Yeah. You're just like, okay. Mexicans on one side are saying this is our land and the U.S. on the other side is saying this is our land and so you guys are fighting over land that is
nobody owns this land. This land is eternal. It's all of our land, you know. Uh-huh. But like at the same time, like I'm gonna kill
what the
you
fuck? Yeah, this is I'm gonna insane. Kill you
I'm gonna kill this is insane.
On January 20th of 1851, you've got the largest Apache victory over the Mexicans according to Utley at Pozo Hediondo, which is Stinking Springs in Sonora. And there's like a smaller group, like an advanced group of Apaches. The Mexicans have laid an ambush that the smaller group triggers. And then the larger group follows up behind them and reinforces their assailed comrades. And it's like an overwhelming victory over the Mexicans. Mangas Coloradas, he takes his forces and I think he heads east towards Janos in Chihuahua to negotiate a settlement. But meanwhile, this other guy, Colonel or Colonel Jose Maria Carrasco, he crosses the Sierra Maestra Mountains, which is like the approximate border between Sonora and Chihuahua, in pursuit. And then March of that year, 51, he attacks the Apache Rancherias, which is their word for village, at Janos, or as the Apaches know it, Casquilla. And this is what's known as the Janos Massacre. You have 21 killed, 62 captives, mostly women and children who are then sold into slavery. And among the slain is Alope, Geronimo's wife, also Geronimo's mother, and the three children that he had with Alope. And so Geronimo, he returns to their rancheria and he burns the teepee that they had together and like destroys all of his children's possessions and stuff because he's so distraught.
That is incredibly sad, but also every time that you try to pronounce a Spanish word, it does feel like you are in Guatemala just trying to you know, people who like try to like learn a little Spanish before they go. It does feel like you're trying and you are a tourist on vacation. And I appreciate you trying, but
thank you. It's all about the attempts. You know what I mean? I've been wondering whether or not to say like Geronimo.
Geronimo.
That feels like too much, you know? Geronimo.
I mean, do it if you want to, man. I don't
Geronimo.
Know.
I feel like I've Anglicanized it, you know, Geronimo.
I mean, look.
Good old Jerry. Geronimo. Okay.
Just say Geronimo. Let's move on.
1851 to 1859, The U.S. is building more and more forts into the recently acquired New Mexico and Arizona, of course. And the Apaches are raiding like Rio Grande settlements while also occasionally receiving rations in Chihuahua and Santa Lucia Springs, which is in southwestern New Mexico, kind of along the Gila River as well. There's prelim reservation negotiations because the U.S. is, of course, trying to consolidate the Apaches onto, you know, get them where they can keep an eye on them, right?
Yeah. The beginning of a long road. A
long road of bullshit and pain and suffering. Yeah.
Yeah.
1860. By 1860, Geronimo's a fairly established warrior. He takes new wives, Chihashkish and Nanathathitl, and they bear him, or they bear children together. And he's close to Mangas Coloradus and Cochise. He's not on their level, but they do appreciate his advice, and he's a notable warrior. Same year, 1860, gold is discovered in the Pinos Altos mountain range. And now you've got more and more white people who are starting to hear about that gold, and they want a little taste, you know?
They never care. Like, nobody, like, wanted to live in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody was like, yo, I found the promised land of New Mexico. Nobody ever said that.
Or let me tell you something. It is desolate. All right.
It is.
Nothing grows out there. It's crazy.
Then they were growing pumpkins. It's, you know, that's
not. Yeah. Pumpkins in New Mexico is not something I think I would ever believe until I was like, okay, cool. Right on.
It's like you're just asking, like, yeah, but how do you do without fucking rain?
What do you do? What
do you do when it doesn't rain? Because this is the Sonoran Desert. This is the era, like, the Sonoran Desert is famous for being a desert.
Yeah, for like, not having shit out there. How do you grow anything out here?
Grow out there when they're like hundreds of undocumented, probably thousands, maybe tens of thousands of undocumented immigrants who just perish in there
because of the heat.
Because the heat, there's no water. So they're fucking just over there just growing pumpkins. We should have left
pumpkins. Like, you got a whole pumpkin patch and like you're like driving tractors through the
desert.
I don't get it, man. I don't get it.
That's a lot, dude.
February 4th of 1861, Cochise, he meets with the whites at the Butterfield Mail Station, which is like in Arizona. There's this, the Butterfield Mail route like runs through New Mexico and Arizona and stuff. He meets with them at the station and he's informed that he and his family would be taken prisoner until a boy stolen by a different band of Apaches was returned to the Americans. And so Cochise, in response to this, he takes out a knife and he cuts the side of the tent open and exits. And then the Americans capture some of Cochise's family. And this is what's known as the cut the tent affair. And Geronimo says in his autobiography, he says that this is, for the most part, like the formal opening of hostilities. This is when the Chiricahua Apaches agree we're not going to be friendly with the whites anymore, at least the ones under like Mangas Colorado and Cochise, because there are, you know, peaceful bands, of course. But it all culminates with like members of Cochise's family are hung, and or some members are, and then it's pretty much just on after that point. 1861 to 1863, this is the opening of the Civil War. Throughout it, Geronimo is raiding with Cochise and Mangas Coloradas around like Pinos Altos and in Mexico. And then in September of 61, Mexicans kill Nanathathitl and their child. So now he's lost two wives, four children, and his mother to the Mexicans. So I can understand how he would be a little prejudiced.
No, you can be a little bit peeved. That would definitely be a little peeved. Yeah, that would upset those quiver one's upper lip.
Yeah, he'll make it a little mad. And it's I forgive you. You know Damn.
Get that Judeo-Christian values out of here. There's no forgiveness. You can see the spirit gods out here. Fuck that.
Fuck it.
I don't know what the spirit gods are, but
March 26th to 28th, 1862. I thought this was interesting. In the same time period, you've got the Battle of Glorieta Pass. There's this Confederate general, Brigadier General from Texas named Henry Sibley, who was turned away by Colorado volunteers under Lieutenant Colonel or Lieutenant John Shivington, who would go on to perpetrate the Sand Creek Massacre 4 years hence.
I didn't know that the Civil War went this far west.
Oh yeah, the guys under Sibley were tasked with taking like New Mexico, Arizona, and I think Colorado, And there was like, I think it was called the Messiah Convention or whatever, where there are these like Confederate dudes who basically wanted to declare New Mexico and Arizona for the Confederacy, even though there were still territories. But there was like a whole divide all the way in California. So it really was like the entire nation.
Yeah, that was like the plan. Like, is that like Arizona and New Mexico are going to become part of the Confederacy? But like doing what? With what would these slaves be doing?
Hey, cranking out pumpkins for the cause.
Right? You can't. I haven't seen a white cranking person grow pumps, pumpkins in right? New Mexico pumping out yet. Pumps. There's New Mexico does not grow pumpkins now. I think white people are like, yo, how the fuck did they do this?
I don't think it does. It's safe to say that maybe we've lost the ways, man. Maybe the Chiricahua probably were the ones who knew how to do it, and now we just don't know. I don't know.
Maybe wrong.
So Sibley goes back to Texas, and this other Confederate general, Lieutenant John Baylor, he remains in New Mexico campaigning against the Chiricahuas. By January 17th of 1863, Mangas Coloradus, he's kind of had enough. I think he's in his like 70s or 60s, 70s at this point, and he's looking to settle. And so he takes half of the Chiricahua band to go and negotiate with the whites at Pinos Altos, while the other half remains in Arizona because they're kind of mistrustful of the whites. And Geronimo's staying in Arizona. He's part of that division. And so Mangus Coloradus gets there to negotiate a settlement, and he's taken prisoner and killed the next night. Like January 19th is the date of his death. He's killed like super early in the morning, even though he just wanted to sue for peace. Yeah. And so Cochise, he's like the next highest guy. He kind of tries to inherit the mantle, but Utley is saying that nobody could fill Mangus Coloradus's shoes. Yeah. He's like the largest Apache warrior whoever was. Leader, that is.
Yeah.
And so Geronimo and Cochise, they move west further into Arizona to Cochise's territory because, you know, he's a Choconin and he's further west.
Yeah.
So 1863 to 1872, Geronimo, he's kind of drifting around between Cochise and this other guy who is a Nedni chief. And Nedni are, I guess, native to like southern Arizona, southern New Mexico, and like northern parts of Mexico. Also his childhood friend, so they have kind of a prior history. And him and Hu are going on raids into Sonora while also popping over into Chihuahua and receiving rations at Janos.
And this is all happening like in like that Gaston Purchase area. Uh-huh. Yeah. Like that weird, like that weird purchase that we did to like get like for like a railroad that really meant nothing. It's a weird story.
I don't even know why. Because the map would look weird if we didn't have, but that just might be because it's been normalized, you know. But like,
it's for a railroad. There's a southern Pacific Railroad that needed to. They wanted to go straight
building out from California.
I think from Texas to California, but I don't know like the exact reading. Only thing I know about Gaston, which I learned reading about the Indian removal. Again, everybody fought in that goddamn Second Seminole War.
Yeah. Man, yeah, and we just never fucking talk about it.
They're talking about the Florida Wars, they call it also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Zachary Taylor,
yeah,
Winfield Scott,
yeah,
fucking.
There's other people, and now it seems like we don't have many, but there are a lot of people. Oh, Beck Wars,
yeah, who? Yeah, Beck Wars, yeah. 1863 to 1870. Oh, sorry. The end of the Civil War in that same period, aforementioned period. You've got an influx of miners after Appomattox is signed and everything. And the miners are coming, but also the cattlemen to feed the miners and the farmers who are trying to break into the pumpkin game, right? God. September and October of 1872, Cochise, he's also looking to settle at that time. And he meets with General Oliver Otis Howard, who we talked about in the last episode, in the Dragoon Mountains in like southeast Arizona. And Cochise gets a reservation at and around this place called Apache Pass. Just think like southern Arizona. And this is part of like Grant's peace policy, right? Because Grant is president. He's pursuing the dual courses. He's got this like official program of peace, right?
Yeah.
And he's trying to concentrate all of the Apaches on reservations again so we can keep an eye on them, right? And the way that the peace policy is phrased or the terms it's couched in is rifle or peace pipe. You've got the peace pipe being Oliver Otis Howard, while the rifle is this guy, Lieutenant Colonel George Crook. And he says in like February of 71, he's saying any Apache not on the reservation, I am going to like force onto the reservation, or he's waging like a war of submission, like designed to coerce them to go onto the reservation or kill them, you know?
Isn't the thing about the reservation also like, well, I mean, this is the basic idea of like, yeah, we cede this piece of land so we can commodify the rest of it. Like the rest of it can become actual like white land that can be up for sale, that can be speculated on, sold, produced. Mm-hmm. Then a bank can come in, sell the land, give you a loan to buy the land, mm-hmm. and then sell you like give you loans to then buy fucking shit for the land,
to farming equipment, like whatever else.
This is like the first part of a long fucking
chain
capitalist plan to fucking make Arizona worth anything.
Yeah. But they did good in the election, right? Thank God for Arizona.
Yeah, I'm not big on the state that gave me John McCain. You gave yourself a point, but there's a lot on the other side, and that's all I'm gonna say about Arizona.
So eventually, Geronimo and Hu agree to settle on Cochise's reservation, but they won't cease raiding in Sonora after they've settled. And so they're kind of using the reservation as like a base of operations, to where they knew they had a safe place across the border that they could just go. And if Mexicans were on their tail, they can't cross the border, right? So we can go and hit all these settlements in Sonora and get all of our shit and get cattle and do whatever, and then pop right back up and they can't do anything.
This does seem like a lot like the like Taliban like Al-Qaeda strategy in Pakistan, mm-hmm. Pakistan, Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're gonna go across that border,
yep.
kill a couple shots at this like army base, and then slide right back into Pakistan, yep. where we can't be got like. Or
I mean, you're not at war with Pakistan, right?
Yeah,
you can't touch us in Pakistan. We're okay. You're at war with Afghanistan. We're not in Afghanistan.
Or NVA, Viet Cong, and Vietnam. We're gonna
Cambodia and everything.
Yeah,
and
take a couple shots and we'll slide back into Cambodia.
Slide back base, you know.
Base. We're good. Is all you gotta, you're not coming across it. Huh? They're not coming across here.
Pursue us. You know, they play by the rules. We don't.
We use your ownership of land against you. How does that feel?
It's a snap loss. You hear?
There's snap loss. Oh, okay. Okay, but they can't hear. You know what? They can't hear it at the
May 1st of 1876. So 4 years after they settled, there's an Indian agent, I think, in either Arizona or New Mexico, named Orizoba Spence, who was killed by an Apache, and partially in response to this, but there are other incidents that lead Congress to do this. They pass a bill ordering Native removal from the Chiricahua Reservation, that one in like Cochise's Reservation, mm-hmm. Southern Arizona, to the White Mountain Reservation that Oliver Otis Howard like helped establish prior to. So they had two different reservations. Congress is now saying, we're going to consolidate that into one because you guys won't stop raiding. You killed our agents. You're being bad, right?
I mean, so first of all, don't tell me to be a bad, I'm a grown man. Second of all, Northern Arizona is kind of dank.
It's better than Southern Arizona.
It's Colorado. It's basically Colorado. It's like there's mountains and trees and like it feels like
cool shit.
Where people go, oh, I went hiking in Northern Arizona, or like they've ever like that's where it snows a little bit. It's like a much more temperate climate, and something I'd be obviously more interested in than Southern hard Sonoran desert Arizona.
Arid Arizona heat and spiders and tarantulas. And of course, like they also want to be able to abolish the Cochise's Reservation, the Chiricahua Reservation. Yeah. That way they can open up more land to public domain, baby.
Yeah, no.
Start that speculation train, you know?
Speculate. Come on, dog. Come on. It's like speculation, banks come in, they buy the land, they get the money, sell you the land, then they'll loan. I've already said it, but it's actually like, damn, dog, this is, y'all really had this planned out.
This is a whole system. This is smart.
It's all just fucking nailed down. It's crazy.
You figured it out, you know?
Yeah. In the most evil way possible.
Yeah. April 21st of 1877, Geronimo, he agrees to talks at the San Carlos Agency, which is located on the White Mountain Reservation. And he rides in with his people and he's surrounded by troops and policemen. He is placed in shackles and imprisoned and forced to live on the reservation. The first time Geronimo breaks out of the reservation, August 1st of 1878, so a year and some change later, he stages a Tiswin drink and then gathers him and his immediate family and like flees during the night and then dips down into Chihuahua to join Hu's camp again around Hanos. They have like mountain strongholds where like places in the mountains that only they know about, and they would like post up there.
Okay.
1878 to 1879, they're kind of doing their thing, raiding in Chihuahua and Sonora, fighting the Mexican troops. And then another like strategy that they had that would increase their survivability or prevent them from getting caught is they would split up. You know, you don't need to always remain as some big conglomerate. You can split into different camps under different leaders, go do your own thing, and then agree to link up at a different space later. And this is like an evasive tactic that they could use.
I wonder if at this time the Mexican authorities that they're fighting are now like, are they actual army units? They're actual army units, or are they fucking rurales? Because the rurales are like an iconic ass, because they're the dudes with the sombreros and like the belt, the ammunition belts. Yeah, like that, the crisscross. Yeah, like that whole image. It's like these like weird like rural militias
that Mexico had. It's probably a mix. It's probably like official troops, government troops, but also private militias, and then just citizens, skirmishes defending their homesteads and whatnot.
The rurales, though.
Sorry.
Okay.
I
did the accent. The rurales.
Oh, okay. Okay. You canceled. You're done, man.
Canceled. That was over.
Late December of 1879, Hu and Geronimo talk with the Indian agent at Fort Bowie in Arizona. And once again, they agree to settle at the White Mountain Reservation, settle at San Carlos. And so it isn't until January 7th of 1880 that the holdout Apaches under Hu and Geronimo reach the San Carlos sub-agency. You know, they build up their village and they resume life on the agency. They do that for, about 2 years this time. Yeah. The second time Geronimo breaks out of the reservation, September 30th of 1881, there's an uprising amongst the, I think it's CBK Apaches in White Mountains, which is like a different band further to the west.
Yeah.
And there are two prominent chiefs who are part of the uprising. They're being pursued. They rush into Geronimo's rancheria and say that they are about to be attacked. So there's a council that follows, and around 400 Choconens, Bedonkohes, and Nednis head south under Geronimo, Hu, and this guy Naiche, who is a son of Cochise, and they cross the border back into Mexico and start it up again, you know, start raiding again.
The first time, okay, this is nobody's fault. It happens. Mm-hmm. Second time, mm-hmm. You guys even guarding this reservation? Did they guard reservations? Or did they just leave it and they were just like, there's somebody close by?
I can't even say, because my instinct is that they didn't have the resources because of all the Lakota uprisings going on in like North Dakota and like chasing down the Chief Joseph and the Nez Perce. But that was over by 1877. And I don't imagine redeployment takes that long. So yeah. I don't know if they, it's kind of like the fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Like, what are we not doing to make sure that this doesn't happen?
I mean, I just like to think it's some like hapless lieutenant who's just like, you literally sent me here with three people. I cannot contain Geronimo. I can't
hold it down. Geronimo is a force of nature.
These are Apaches.
You gave me some strung out 17-year-olds.
Yeah,
riddled with acne and anxiety, and
everybody's on opium.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to do in Arizona. I don't know if you heard about it, but yeah, that's what I like to think. It's just like some dude who keeps getting assigned this position. It keeps failing.
I can't do it, man. I can't. What do you want me to do? This is your fault, you know?
And then it's like captain's like, God damn it, Johnson. It's like, sorry, sir.
God damn it, Johnson.
Sorry, sir. Yeah, that's what I like.
We gotta bring in some bigger brass. And then he picks up the telephone, you know?
And he calls just a murderer. like
Hello.
Yeah, like that's literally like what half these people are. It's like they just call absolute murdering psychopaths.
They're crazy.
Yeah, crazy people. Like have the West people think, oh, the heroes. No, no, no. A lot of people are just fucking murderers.
Psychos. Yeah.
The psychopaths.
April 26th or 27th in 1882. I think it's like the night of those two dates. The Geronimo's forces are in Mexico, like the Espuelas or in Medio Mountains, and they're feasting and they're dancing because they're, I think they scored a couple of victories and they're happy to be off the reservation. And they're so excited that they don't post scouts. And so they're attacked early the morning of the 28th by the Americans who have now traversed into Mexico, right? There's like 78 Chiricahuas killed, nearly all women and children. It could have been much worse, but like the scouts who find them, they basically start the battle instead of going back to their camp and being like, hey, we found them, they're over here. And then they could, so it could have been worse. I mean, it's still very tragic, of course, yeah, but it could have been like a complete rout of Geronimo.
Yeah.
May of 1882, Geronimo's band, in response to this, they managed to reach Hu at the Sierra Maestra, and there's about like 650 Apaches total. They're in this hideout called Bugat Seca, which is like southeast in the Sierra Maestra, I believe, if you kind of like trace it down.
Look, Henry, and nobody's going to blame you if you do not have a detailed history, a detailed knowledge of Chihuahuan Sonoran locations.
Mountain pastures
and shit. It's fine.
Like, I'm only a man, damn. Yeah. They're from Bugat Seca. They're like raiding villages and ranches and wagon trains throughout Chihuahua and Sonora. Like nobody is safe, you know what I mean? January 24th of 1883, the Geronimo and Hu split up, and Hu and his people are heading west from Guaynopa, which is another one of these mountain fortresses, and they're found by Mexican troops with Tarahumari natives on their payroll. So there's like another indigenous group that has been flipped by the Mexicans to fight for them. They hit the rancheria, take captives, kill a bunch of people. And this is like a huge loss of face for Hu, because he loses like, again, like a bunch of women and children, a bunch of his people. Yeah. And so he kind of starts to spiral into alcoholism.
Yeah.
The survivors, they go and join Geronimo back at Bugat Seca. There's increasing pressure on George Crook to haul the Apaches out of Sierra Maestra and back onto the reservation. His specific orders from William Tecumseh Sherman: ignore national boundaries. We don't give a shit that they're in Mexico. We need this situation under control. Can you get the job done?
And it's like in this time, which is what's the next, like, what, 40 years?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that the next 4 years, there's going to be a lot of military action on mm-hmm. these borders. Mm-hmm. Pancho Villa. We're going to talk about Juan Cortina. Mm-hmm. Juan Cortina, sorry. And like, so like, and from my, and even within that, those like bigger strokes, there seems to be constant little like military, little like revolutions that happen. Then poop pop up there. Then they pop back down. Mm-hmm. It's like this border, again, I think we were talking about this before. We think of this border as like, this is one side and that's the other side. These are two different mm-hmm. peoples. No, mm-hmm. this is just one area.
Yeah.
With one group of people that are defined differently.
Yeah.
But this area suffers from all of the same things.
Yeah.
And like,
a border is such a weird,
it's not real
concept, because it's not, it's not a real thing. It's something that's imposed. It's something that we all just kind of agree is there.
Some of us don't agree on it,
and some of us don't agree, and it's kind of crazy, but it's also like it's weird how the U.S. is like, no, the border does exist except when we need to cross it in order to get our shit done, you
the
know?
Border exists except when we need
when we say it doesn't,
when we need cheap labor.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, and then the border doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's weird.
The border does exist when we are trying to win an election, we need to scapegoat some people.
Yes, when we need to throw an entire ethnicity under the bus, the border definitely exists.
Just saying, exists. We want to build a wall on a thing that we can't really mm-hmm. even
mm-hmm.
under. You know what?
Like, but when we need to offload our excess corn stocks to please our farmers, then that border most certainly does not.
And then like, completely destroyed Mexican agriculture.
Oh yeah. Leading an endless cycle of immigrants trying to escape a destroyed economy to go and work where the jobs are.
Yeah. And then leaving rural Mexicans who to move to inner cities. And then flux in a jobless place. Maybe then they find the only places that are hiring are narco traficantes. It's a whole thing.
Maybe.
It's
a whole thing. Maybe. And maybe those narco traficantes are also propped up by the government offloading their corn stores and blaming.
Maybe we're prepping. Maybe we understand that this will never end. And then we're prepping up certain. We can keep going on this train. There's so much, you know what? But we're not going to be one of those hack podcasts that does narco stuff, even though it's so much.
Even
so
though it's fertile, sick, even though people will listen to it, you know?
It's fertile ground, big dog.
I'm pretty happy. We got pretty deep in that one.
We can keep going.
May 1st.
They just found out the defense minister in Mexico was also dealing drugs. Let him go. He got indicted, They let him go. Like, why? Okay, you know what? How you get out of a federal indictment? You answer that question for me.
We'll find out. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
May 1st of 1883, Crook crosses into Mexico with his forces, and he's also got like a bunch of Apache scouts on his payroll, or his employ under his dominion or whatever. And this is part of Crook's strategy because Crook kind of believes like only an Apache can catch an Apache. I got to think like an Apache. I'm a white man. I'm going to have the white man's approach. I need to understand their approach so I can catch them. And he's heading into the Sierra Maestra. He comes across the Rancheria in Bugat Seca. The men are away raiding, and he takes one of another war leader's daughters captive. And in late May, Geronimo doesn't immediately talk to Crook. But after enough of his own people kind of file in, he agrees to talk with him, and he nominally surrenders. And so June 11th of 1883, Crook crosses back into the United States with about 325 Chiricahua, but it's not Geronimo and Hu's people. It's like two other leaders who abdicate primarily and agree to settle in White Mountain, where Geronimo and Hu, they're still hanging out, you know, they're still raiding, doing their thing. And that's what they do like the rest of the year. Naiche, Geronimo, Hu still holding out. Who dies? There's like a drunken accident. I think he like falls off his horse or something. There's still kind of some shady details around that, or some controversy around that. Geronimo, meanwhile, he's like putting his feelers out. He sends his son Chapo to San Carlos to see what conditions like are there and see if he can get a equitable settlement or whatever.
Here's a question: how can you raid what was yours? How can you raid what? What was stolen from you?
They're raiding like the settlements that pop up, and I guess it's kind of like if you want to think of it like indigenous eminent domain. This was our land. You put this settlement on our land, therefore this settlement is ours.
Eminent domain implies that you've like this is a government entity that I've like that the eminent domain
it's
is
the
like
government
a legal.
The that's a great spirit.
Okay, no, don't do
the
this.
Eminent domain.
Don't do
the
this.
Great spirit.
This
Come
is
on, bro.
This is fork this is fork tongue devil stuff, and I like this is what do they call it? They call it the fork tongue devil. That's what
sophistry?
They call.
Oh yeah, fork tongue sophistry. Yeah.
Yeah, for the
that's like Greek, but yeah.
No, that's what they call like all the they'll be like all the neighbor the indigenous people will be like. These white people are forked tongue. You gotta remember
got
that.
Fork, they speak with a forked tongue, man.
Yeah.
Goes both ways.
Gotta remember that.
Can't trust them.
And that's how I feel about you, but let's keep moving on. Let's keep moving on.
We'll talk about that later.
Right. We won't.
March 1884, after Geronimo drags his feet enough, he's like raiding and rustling cattle. Geronimo turns himself in at San Carlos, and he's got like all his equipment seized and all of his cattle seized. And what I thought was kind of funny is like all the cattle that he brings into the San Carlos reservation, they like all have Mexican brands on them. So this man was prolific as far as what he could rustle and everything. And he's like, here he is. Like, this is my cattle. And he's like, no, it's very clearly, or it's marked with some.
How can I
brand.
Steal
like,
what comes from my land? Damn, son. Damn. Yeah.
I'm in the domain of the great spirit.
Okay.
That's what I'm
all
saying,
right.
man.
All right. Don't you bring your fork tongue devil. Okay. Let's keep.
So he gets on the reservation and conditions on the reservation. There are a bunch of unenforceable bans. Crook is trying to ban them from drinking Tiswin as part of their ceremonies, and he can't really do that. They have a really bad winter. There's disease outbreaks, and the land is really crappy, so they can't really grow anything. So it's not great on the reservation. The third and final time.
Johnson
breaks out of the reservation is on May 17th, 1885. he busts out again with Mangas, who is not Mangas Coloradus. He's dead, but it's the son of Mangas Coloradus, yeah. His boy Naiche, and about 144 people. And they're pursued by the Fort Apache garrison. But, you know, Fort Apache guys, they're terribly slow. They don't know the terrain. And 10 months, it's more of the same. You know, U.S. columns are running around Mexico, told to impress supplies from and then reimburse Mexican citizens, which obviously pisses them off because now they're having their cattle stolen and slain and eaten by white men. And they're just like, I just can't catch a fucking break, can I? You know, I just need to move.
You know how hard it'd be like, hey, man, so you got to take this up with the U.S. government. Where do I have to go? You have to go to a DMV.
And you don't get a number.
You have to get a number. Also, you don't speak English. Yeah. And this isn't a time when we have a bilingual person here. So you're not going to get your shit back. That's what it feels like.
Just don't. But you have a claim. That's something. You have a claim. That's cool.
Right? That's what you look. You got to deal with the U.S. government in 1886. It's not going to work out, dog.
We're going to bog you down. We're going to bog you down in a mind-numbing amount of paperwork. Yeah. It's going to be crazy.
First of all, love it. The post office is just going to drop whatever you need at the border. They don't carry it into Mexico.
No.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Drop it right there. Yep. Yeah. And who knows what happens. Well, I mean, we delivered it, right? We took a picture.
We delivered it. And if you don't get this in 30 days, you have to start it all over again. And that's fun.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
March 25th of 1887. So again, like, you know, they're on the run. U.S. is pursuing. And there's just like a slew of bodies that are left in the Apache's wake. So March 25th of 1886, Geronimo finally meets with Crook at Cañon de los Embudos, which is like right south of the dividing line between New Mexico and Arizona. And Crook says through his interpreter, he gives him an ultimatum of unconditional surrender and says, if he doesn't, he says, if you stay out, I'll keep after you and kill the last one if it takes 50 years. So he is mincing no words here.
He's not going to be that old, but that's fine.
No, he's not going to live that long.
Yeah, that's fine. He's a ghost.
Geronimo agrees to surrender initially, but then he goes back on that, and Crook has to cable back to President Cleveland and basically say, like, I had him, and then I lost him. And so President Cleveland replaces Crook with Brigadier General Nelson Bearcoat Miles, whom Chief Joseph surrendered to. So Nelson Miles, he's the guy who gets shit done, right? September 2nd of 1886, the Apaches, the holdouts, Geronimo's guys, they're in the custody of this guy, Captain Henry Lawton. They meet with Miles at Skeleton Canyon, where they're like, you know, they file into, I think, Arizona. They board a train at Fort Bowie, I believe, go all the way to San Antonio. And when they're at San Antonio, they are told that they are being transported to Florida.
Ah, it all comes back to Florida. Also, Skeleton Canyon. Great name for a canyon. Very spooky.
Mm-hmm.
very, very.
I'm gonna get ganked in Skeleton Canyon.
What?
I'm gonna get ganked. You know,
okay,
ganked.
No, we don't have enough time for that. No.
Yeah, where you get killed, you know?
Dispute to fucking unlayer all the fucking all weird. The
okay, that's cool.
Fucking
cool.
Spring fucking teenage boy shit.
It's my wild days, you know? They got the wild days, right?
Okay, Florida. So,
Nelson Miles basically promised Geronimo prior to their surrender that they would be kept together. And he's got this metaphor with like stones, that we're going to keep the stones together. But he goes back on that. The men are being kept at Fort Pickens in Western Florida, like right outside of Pensacola. And like the women and children are moved to Fort Marion in Eastern Florida. So they're separated from their families and they're in Florida, this place that they've never been before. But like the U.S. government is thinking, you're not going to bust out of the reservation again, because there's no incentive. You know this land too well. Let's put you somewhere else, right? And let's drop this stone somewhere else.
Here is a go-kart. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about being living in a go-kart, living in a place called the Villages?
Here is an alligator. It's pretty weird.
You get a go-kart and you get to live next to all people from the Northeast who have retired here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to go down the peninsula because there's too many Hispanics there.
There's too many Hispanic people there, and
occupy that. They just that little panhandle, you know, that white pristine.
And you just introduced. Hey, Geronimo, these are your neighbors. These are people ruining the country for years.
it's Becky and Carl. Like, hello, always wearing a fanny pack, always ready with a fanny pack and a sun visor.
From Milwaukee, to you, Milwaukee, and just uncomfortable around black people.
1887 to 1888, Geronimo is doing hard labor at Fort Pickens. Some of the Chiricahua youths enroll in the Carlisle School in Pennsylvania, where they're basically their indigenous culture is like outlawed and forced out of them. And something that I thought was kind of like fucked up is 65 out of 82 adult men at Fort Marion had served as scouts. So they're the guys who had helped bring Geronimo in, but because they're indigenous, they're treated and considered as POWs.
Yeah,
so they have to be prisoners as well, even though they were the ones who helped out.
This is what something we learn as black people very early. No matter how good, how nice you are, no matter how much you follow the rules, still a nigga at the end of the day. So,
what are you gonna do?
In the eyes? Yeah, no, you're still black.
Yeah. There's investigations into conditions on the reservation. Following those investigations, the Chiricahuas are kind of reshuffled. Some, including Geronimo, are sent to, and like members of his family, so he's happy about this, are sent to Mount Vernon Barracks in Alabama. And then some are consolidated at Fort Pickens, while others are filed into the Carlisle School. May 1888 to 1894, there's another reshuffling. Geronimo arrives at the Mount Vernon Barracks, and, you know, again, he's with his family, but conditions are still very shitty. There's no infrastructure. They're trying to grow crops, and they just can't do it. The land is bad. There's disease. But Geronimo, he's got one thing going for him, and that is the merch game. His thing was that he would craft walking sticks and sell those to tourists because he's like a nationally known warrior at this point. So people are coming to see him at both his places, and he's like, here, I'll sell you my walking sticker. Here's my autograph. That'll be 25 cents. Or here's a bow and arrow I made. That'll be $3. You know, he's getting in on the game, right?
And he's like in Alabama. He's like, these fucking hicks don't know no fucking better. Like, I like to think he has like a New York accent. These fucking dumb fucking hicks. They don't know any fucking, there's not a fucking arrow.
I made this bow out of birch. You understand? This is the shittiest bow I could have made, and they love it. They eat it up. All right.
Oh, Mobster Geronimo is hilarious to me. He's just eating the big fucking ragu. And he's like, these fucking
Geronimo
fucking,
in a fedora.
Yeah.
That would
they don't know shit. There's just a bunch of fucking hicks from fucking the middle of fucking nowhere. Ding 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 ding. Yeah, fuck off. Suck my mouth. Like, oh my god. Mobster Geronimo.
I can like see that. The vibe. You know, it still fits. That's the thing, is my brain doesn't explicitly reject it. I'm like,
No,
that's about right. Geronimo, while at Mount Vernon Barracks, he becomes justice of the peace and it solidifies his position as a leader under new conditions. But it's also kind of ironic because now Geronimo is the one who's in charge of enforcing discipline. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so officials are visiting Mount Vernon and they report how crappy conditions are again. And they're relocated for the last time to Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
And that's not a step
all
up.
All roads end in Oklahoma.
It's not a step up. All people right. Like Alabama, like how like can it get worse? And it's like, yes, it's Oklahoma. And I want to play all the clubs in Oklahoma. I want to make you guys laugh. But I want to talk about how bad Oklahoma is. I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah, well, here we are, you know.
And you told Joe the vacation there, but let's not talk about that.
Hey, I just had one of the best breakfasts of my life, all right? Cafe Cacao. In OKC is dope. Eat that
anything.
Shit.
Okay. You're like it's okay. All right.
It's good, man. It's good. Right. Cafe Cacao.
You have the palate of a 4-year-old.
I like octopus. I'll throw that out
that
there.
That means all nothing right? to me.
That's crazy. February of 1898, newspapers report of the attack, quote unquote, on the USS Maine, which of course is the opening of the war in Cuba, and Apache warriors from Fort Sill are mobilized and sent off to fight in the war. There was like a program prior to, I think, at one of the other reservations where they were like, we're going to train Apache warriors and integrate them into our army. And sure enough, they are integrated.
Yeah.
In an interview, Geronimo says toward the end of his life, he says, the sun rises and shines for a time, and then it goes down, sinking out of sight and is lost. So it will be with the Indians. He's kind of reflecting on the plight of his people and just seeing where all the threads are going. And he's obviously despaired.
So you can say at the end of his life, not optimistic.
Not optimistic. He wrote something to his son, Chapo, who went to Carlisle. He was like, I hope you will like read a bunch of books and learn how to succeed in this new world. But he's not happy about it, obviously.
Yeah.
March 9th of 1905, Geronimo is escorted into the White House to meet Teddy Roosevelt, the president. And he asks, the way Utley frames it, he like begs. And he's like crying. He's like, please resettle us in Arizona. We just want to go home. But yeah. Teddy Roosevelt's like, you guys broke out three times. I don't know what you want me to. There's no trust.
And that young Lieutenant Johnson never gained his confidence. Mm-mm. He's still
shaky.
Still shaky.
Maybe drinking too much at the bar. Yeah. Nobody really wants to talk to him because he seems a little rattled. He seems a little.
But
unhinged,
he will. But he will go
he's too
on.
Quiet also.
But he will go on to create Puck Off. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or just get super into puppets and marionettes.
Really weirdly into puppets. Really weirdly
it's
into the marionettes.
Kind of concerning, but.
Yeah,
because
everybody knows when you fail at everything, you get into puppets.
Like, the last bastion of anything. I don't.
It's puppeteering.
Puppeteering, marionettes. That's my thing.
Yeah.
1905 or 1906. These are the years that Geronimo is dictating his autobiography, and then February 17th of 1909 is Geronimo's death. He went to like sell some bow and arrows in town, and he gets a soldier to purchase him a jug of whiskey. And he's riding on the way back to Fort Sill, riding on the way back to his home. And he just falls from his horse and just lays out in like freezing weather, develops pneumonia, and then dies. And he is buried outside of Fort Sill. So he never, not even his bones got to go back to Arizona. And Utley, or just closing remark, this is like, Utley says that when Geronimo surrendered in 1886, like finally gave it up in September of 18, that is the closing of the Indian Wars, that there wouldn't be like another, you know, not the closing of the frontier, because I still don't think it's like totally closed, or you can make that argument. But as far as the armed conflicts that we've been talking about, Utley is saying that they end with Geronimo.
These massive strokes with bands of the end with Geronimo. Okay. Not a lot of happy endings in this part of this package.
No.
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 No. No. Well, guys, what do we have next on the
next week
on the docket?
We are talking about another outlaw who was a terror amongst the border. We're talking about the one, the only, Juan Cortina.
Okay, that's going to be an exciting one. Mm-hmm. A lot of parallels we're going to draw. It's going to be a beautiful one. Mm-hmm. Well, guys, I want to thank you for listening. That's been Geronimo. Interesting, beautiful story, sad story that ends, you know, but the story of a part of the country that I don't really know a lot about, New Mexico and Arizona. And well, thank Henry for doing a lot of research on that.
Sure thing.
And you guys, we need you to follow, subscribe, like all of our content and
rate and review. That would really help
all
us
all of it. Thank you. Please subscribe to everything. Please follow us at on Instagram at Hardfire History, on Facebook at Hardfire History, on Twitter HFH Podcast, on YouTube. Please subscribe at Hardfire History. Rate and review all of our stuff. You can find me at Joshua B. Stokes on Instagram, Joshua B. Stokes on Twitter, and Joshua Stokes on Facebook. Henry, where can they find you at?
I'm just Henry E. Price on Instagram and Henry E. Price on Facebook. Say what's up.
Guys, well, thank you again for listening. Come back next time. Mm-hmm. We'll see you. We'll see you next
time.
Be
safe.
Time.
Peace out. Yep.
We'll see you next time.
And Happy New Year, I guess.
Happy New
right?
Year, I guess. Right, I don't, yeah. Cool. Have fun.
That, if you're into that, who cares? Be Have safe. Fun. I hope it's a better safe. Year. You know, we all do, right?
Yeah, don't say that. Now you're going to jinx. Son of a bitch. Okay. No, Happy New Year.